This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 11 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast. I hope you're enjoying the series so far. We've got some massive names coming up as guests when we move to weekly podcasts during the regular season. But next up is a homegrown talent, Cleveland Browns punter Jamie Gillen, wonderfully known as the Scottish Hammer. Jamie has become well known for bursting American footballs and for being a key player for the Browns. But it was rugby where his sporting career started, playing a big role in his family life.
Yeah, I grew up watching my dad play when I was a kid. My mum would come down the pram when I was just a bairn, as she would say, and I'd watch my dad play rugby ever since I was a kid. I loved it. I mean, sport's been the only thing I've really been passionate about, so soon. I mean, dad's got stories of me when I'm 5'3" years old, just punting rugby balls and stuff too, running around in the dirt. I used to love it, so didn't take much for me to start playing rugby.
No, it served you well as you've transferred into different sports. But at the time, growing up, then, not a fan of American football? I think I asked you this in training camp in the summer. Not really on your radar, was it?
No, not at all. I do actually remember when I was at my gran and granddad's house. Granddad was the one that had Sky Sports. We never had Sky Sports, so I was there looking through. There was no rugby on, and I saw American football. Thinking, oh my lord, this is so slow, like so stoppy and starty. And I'm used to 40 minutes of just high impact rugby. I think to myself, man, I'm pretty bored right now, and I'm just turning it off. But now, you know, playing it, been playing it for a while,
yeah.
Super into it. Well, because I have to be, but even sure. Before I was playing, just the analyst kind of side of it and what actually goes into it. Now I'm just so into it. It's amazing.
I think that's the key, isn't it? A lot of people, once they start to understand it, because it's got great tactical side of it, but it's got the physicality as well. Then
right. And now seeing the hits in person now is just completely changed my mind too, because they absolutely wallop each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's totally different to a tackle with you, because when you got no pads on, you're way more conscious of your body for the impact. So you're going to hit someone in a way that's going to protect you too. Whereas you have that helmet on your head, you're not thinking about that. You're going to go and try and murder that guy.
They're supposed to tackle the rugby way now. Right, but it doesn't always happen, right?
That's really hard with the helmet. I actually did it one time, and it was actually in a college game. This guy, I kicked the squib kick, and everybody got blocked. Came right up the middle, and I dropped down to pretty much try and dump tackle this guy. And because I got down like real low and put my head down, the front bit blocked my view.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I completely missed him and damn near knocked. I didn't mean to cuss there, but I nearly nearly knocked out my own teammate. I clattered heads with him. I fell over. I'm thinking, what have I done? He got tackled.
I was like, man,
I
always say, see what you hit. See?
Right.
And then you moved to the US. Tell us about that and about. I guess that was your first real exposure to the sport of American football.
Yeah, that was awesome. I really enjoyed that move. I've got family and friends for life out in the States, and we lived in Maryland, and we still do live in Maryland, but it's very, very, very south, so it's very country. Mm. And I, like I said, I got a lot of pals there, and doing my last 2 years of school there was very fun, and getting to experience football too. And so going to the football team and that, they absolutely love it. And high school football is big in is huge in the States.
Yeah.
And it's quite cool. You play a little bit of football, and then that's done. And then you'll do indoor track maybe, or a winter sport, wrestling. And then you'll have golf for the springtime, or some or outdoor track or something. So you get a variety of sports in America.
Was that an eye-opener to you? Because you think of playing for the school team here in the UK, maybe your dad had come along and watched. There might be somebody walking the dog in the park. But was that a bit of an eye-opener, just how big high school sports are in the US?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Leonardtown High School didn't really get a whole crowd. It was just mums and dads. But then you go to high school games in Texas and stuff, and it's just
ridiculous.
Mad. They get thousands and thousands of people to watch high school football. And I think it's awesome. Like, I really love the fact that American sports are so big and people are passionate about it. Instead of, you know, making it cool to be passionate about your local team and supporting it and fundraising. And that's what it's about. I think it's amazing.
And what did you do? Was it just punting, or did you kick as well at your high school?
I kicked and punted at high school and kicked and punted in college.
It was at high school and college where Jamie discovered and honed his kicking technique, making a name for himself for his treatment of the football. We'll get to that part later. It was after a night out with some friends, though, that he awoke to find a Facebook message offering him a place at a college in America. Social media being a rather unconventional recruitment tool, Jamie wasn't quite sure how to take things at first.
So I'd already accepted a scholarship to a Division II school. I had a bunch of schools hitting up my coach for preferred walk-on, but I wasn't going to pay money to go to a school. It's
expensive.
Yeah, it's like a mortgage to go to school out there. So just looking for full scholarships. Division II school gave me a full scholarship, but I didn't sign the papers, so I was technically still a free agent. And I was on a night out with my buds and stuff, and unknown to me, my friend Trent had put my stuff in the Facebook,
right,
and to the recruiter page, because the Arkansas Pine Bluffs kicker decommitted, and I get a phone call, and I'm feeling pretty good, and coach was like, "Hey, this is University of Arkansas Pine Bluff, we'd like to offer you a full scholarship." I was like, "Oh, what division?" And then I looked at my friend. I was like, "My buds, like, hey, full scholarship." And like, "What division?" What division? D1. Oh, this is D1. I was like, D1. And they're like, "Take it." I was like, "Okay." And then I was like, I take it. And Coach Anderson was like, "Are you sure? Like, you don't want to come see
come
the school?
See
like,
the place?
It's just so fun." I was like, "Yeah, I'll take it." And we chatted a little bit, and I accepted the scholarship. And I woke up in the morning. I was like, "Oh, man, I accepted this scholarship. What have I done?" And I immediately called Coach Woodbury, like, "Coach, you're not going to believe what I just did. I accepted a full scholarship to a D1 school." And he was pumped up because Division I school. And then I immediately got back. He did all the paperwork and stuff, and we got all together. And then 5 days later, I was on the plane.
And how soon into that college career did you allow yourself to think about the NFL?
Well, that was my main decision. That's why I was going to go the football route even from the get-go. Was
right.
If I'm going to take 4 years out of rugby, which was my passion, I'm going to get paid to kick. That was
give it a proper shot. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and go all in. Let's do this, because I'm sacrificing 4 years of. I didn't even mean to do this, but with my family, you know, it's been 4 years since I come home, and of rugby, which is my passion. And so I said to myself, I got to go and do this. And,
yeah.
If I don't make it, I'll look back and I give it my all.
Yeah, at least you're not going to have any regrets, any
exactly.
Questions. I love the story, of course. It's one that's been well told now about bursting the footballs. It's a funny story at the time, and it's funny for the first year or two of your NFL career. Year 10, that story, you'll be like, "Oh, I still got to tell that story." But it's funny, and it's tell us about that, and the because you were annoyed. You didn't have a lot of footballs to practice with, right?
I only had three.
Yeah.
And I popped all three of them. It's like, great.
And when was that going? Was that preparing for the draft? Or?
Yeah. I had four, and one of them stayed alive because it was one of my buds' footballs that stayed alive, which was awesome. But the three new ones I got all popped. And the Wilson wouldn't send me new ones because they had to have proof or something or whatever. And I didn't have time. It's like I got school. My classes got messed up, so I had to take almost double the amount of classes for that term as well to graduate on time, because I really want to graduate too. And I was like, screw it, I'll just punt football. As long as they're odd-shaped, kick them.
You'll kick them.
Yep. So when they popped, I was like, oh, this is annoying. And I know people have popped footballs in the past, but I think it was just because it was really cold. But
yeah.
I was just really surprised. It was one after, like, first one went in the first day, then the second day, and then I took a day off, and then the third day, I lost the next one.
If it gets people talking about you leading into the draft, though, it works, right?
Right, so, I guess so.
I know you've been back over here in the UK, you went to the NFL Academy. My son is a quarterback at the NFL Academy.
Oh, cool.
And he told me about a month into their practices that my son had thrown a pass during practice at the quarterback net, you know, the net, and he broke it. He said he broke it, and I was like, George, it's good enough for Jamie Gillen. I said, the whole story with the footballs worked.
Yeah.
I said, we'll tell your story about breaking the quarterback net. I mean, it's just funny how sometimes those sort of things catch the media attention. It probably did for you leading into the draft.
Yeah, it did. And I didn't expect it to, because it wasn't one of those things that I was saying, oh, look at me, you know, I pop footballs.
Sure.
But they loved it. And I was like, okay, cool. And they asked me more about it, like, you know, and they're just saying, how that happened. I have no idea. Just I was really annoyed because I had no, I'm trying to practice with NFL football, so they're different to college. And then they're gone. I go, great.
Start air kicking.
Right, that's all I could do.
I once played a game. I used to play in the British League. We once played a game. We weren't very good, our team. And we played against the reigning national champions. And we turned up, we'd forgotten our bag of footballs. So our entire pre-game warm-up was pretending to run routes and catch passes. It was so embarrassing. While the other team had like 25 balls and we were like, can we borrow a ball? They're like, no, we need them all. So, yeah. But at least you didn't have to go that route where you're actually pretending to punt. At least you could still kick. Now, one thing I don't think there's enough of in the NFL is nicknames. We have them in other sports and they've been big in the NFL in the past. Walter Sweetness, Peyton, Jack Hacksaw Reynolds, what a nickname that was. Ted Hendricks, the old Raiders linebacker, was the Mad Stork. But in the modern era of the NFL, they just don't seem to stick. Unless your name is Jamie Gillen, of course, who is known as the Scottish Hammer.
I put it under the rug for college and someone pulled the rug up and undug it from the grave and it came out. So everybody calls me it now.
I first interviewed you at the Browns training camp in last summer, and when we were there, we were doing a documentary, about the Browns for NFL Game Pass. And it was, I don't know if it was that way every day for you, but it was like bedlam. It was like there was national media there, NFL Network were there, Fox were there, we were there. Every move that Baker Mayfield made, there was screaming, the fans were chanting. And I remember looking over onto a field away from where the offense was, and you were practicing hold after hold after hold. Mm-hmm. And I talked to you afterwards, and I'm guessing that you knew that was going to have to be a part, big part of it. It was part of your route to the NFL. And there's all this kind of craziness going on. Mm-hmm. And then I just saw you doing what should be one of the most routine parts of America, but you were just hundreds of them. Yep. Did you really realize early on, I need to perfect this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when I decided to go to the Browns, I said to myself, I'm going to give the Browns or any team no reason to not have me on a roster.
Right.
Like, absolutely. Like, I'm not going to give them a holding reason, a punting reason. I was just like, I'm a work ethic reason, a personality reason, because there's so many things. Because once you're so tight and tight with someone, that you're going down the check boxes, right, to see what is kind of different. And I was like, I'm going to be myself. I'm going to work hard because that's what I like to do. Yeah. And hold, and I still do. I mean, every day with Coach Prefer, I was still holding like 100 footballs every day. Even up until the last game of the season, I'll continue to do that. Yeah. Because practice will always make perfect, and it's the hardest part about that is staying focused and doing it, but that's what's going to make you great. I won't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good for you. You entered the NFL, obviously, as a free agent. So you have, to a degree, a choice. Obviously, teams have to be interested in you, and then you the same. Were there a number of teams interested in you?
My agent said there was a fair few, but I didn't care. I knew where I wanted to go if I went free agent.
So that's interesting that you wanted to go to the Cleveland Browns, because if you look at quarterbacks in the NFL, you'll see the Manning name. If you look at punting in the NFL, you will see the Colquitt name.
Yeah.
And you weren't deterred by that. You rose to that challenge.
No, and it wasn't almost wasn't a challenge to me. It was just an experience. I'm going to go, he's a 10-year vet, right? I'm going to show him respect, because that's another thing with like rugby and being out here and stuff, is that you're always going to show your vets respect no matter what. Mm. If we're playing rugby together and you've been playing for the team for 8 years, and
you're going to defer to them a little bit.
Exactly. I'm going to do what they say. I'm going to ride along the wave until I have earned my stripes too. Mm. So that was my mindset going into that. And the first thing, saying to Coco was, I have the utmost respect for you, and I'm really excited to learn from you. Mm. Not like, and I don't know if a few times, like when I was at college and stuff, I'm like my last year, or my second last year, I've got new jumped up little kids telling me they're going to beat me out of my position and stuff.
I think that's the worst when people come in and do that.
Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, man, take a seat, pal.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. So for me, I'm totally against that. Like, there's an older head there, it's respect.
Yeah. You're going to compete, but at least be respectful about
exactly.
It, right?
And I thought, I'm going to learn, And the great thing was, is Coco is such a good guy. You can't not like Britain,
yeah,
even if you tried. And we got along. I felt like two peas in a pod. We still text each other through the season a little bit, like giving like cheeky remarks and stuff. And it's pretty funny. But I just knew I'm just going to watch him, see what he does. I'm obviously completely different to Britain, how I punt and everything, but learn from his mental, like mentally holding and everything, and just little pointers and stuff. And the one thing we both said to each other is we want to play on a team somewhere. So whether I play for the Browns and he goes somewhere else, or I go somewhere else and he plays for the Browns.
Like, help each other. Yeah.
We'll be back with Jamie Gillen after this short break on the Neil Reynolds podcast.
Hi, I'm Nat Coombs, host of the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Gotta love that title. Where 3 times a week, I'm joined by the very best from across the ESPN galaxy, getting you up to speed on all the key NFL news and views that you need to know about. And we've got plenty of your favorite NFL UK voices dropping by as well. Carlson, J-Bell, Isaacs, Bandini, and of course, Reynolds, all the big guns, quite frankly. So just search the Nat Coombs Show wherever you get your podcasts, and we look forward to having you.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds podcast. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Jamie Gillen about the culture of the NFL and how he's worked hard to integrate himself into that. But given his background in rugby, he does bring something a little different to the whole idea of punting in American football. So I asked him if that perhaps allows him to adapt to different situations compared to other punters in the NFL.
I wouldn't say, not...
If things went wrong, would you be able to... Would you feel more confident than maybe an American punter in...
I don't know, because I don't know what goes through the other guy's heads. Know if I've got to make a play, I'm determined to go and make that play if things happen. But I strive to just punt the ball well enough that I don't ever have to make a play. So although I did have to make a play a couple of times in the preseason, but you know it comes with the game. You strive for perfection, but sometimes you fall a little bit short.
That preseason, you ripped off a 74-yarder against Indianapolis. Your second game, did that kind of give you even more? I mean, I guess you have to have confidence to even get to the level you were at. You have to have a degree of self-confidence, otherwise you're not gonna survive. You're not gonna make it. But did it give you more confidence when you're out there in an NFL game and there's a 74-yard punt?
Yeah, because it was tough because you're not. Me and Britton were going one punt each, so you don't know whether you're gonna You're not getting rhythm. You don't know whether you're gonna have one punt or 3 punts a game. So it's one shot, one kill, as they say. I'm in there. I'm sharing punting with Colquitt. I'm thinking, I just need to rip one, you know. And as soon as I hit it, I'm thinking in my head, Peaver's going to kill me because I had no hang time in that thing. That thing was just like a rocket.
So it needed to miss the returner.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, please don't get this returner because, you know, our gunners are going out. But it was probably about four seconds, 60-something in the air. I'm thinking, oh, no, I'm in trouble. Returner didn't get to it because it went right over his head and then it got like a 25-yard roll. I was like, that, the Lord. And everybody was like, hey, good punch. I'm like, oh, boy, I got lucky.
And I guess that's part of it. We watch the punter and we have to recognize, and maybe enough people don't recognize, it's all in conjunction with the other guys on the special teams unit. You can't just outkick your coverage. You're not just out there, Jamie, just kick it as far as you can. Nope. It's not, doesn't work that way, right?
Because you've got to be so accurate with it. You strive to be accurate with it. It's a little bit harder when it's super windy and stuff, but you got to be accurate with it. You don't want to hit a rocket because... And it also depends where you are in the field, because if you're at the back of the end zone, your goal is to send a rocket down the field because you're trying to get as far down the field as possible.
Yeah.
But when you're, you know, in the normal field of play and stuff, you want to get the hang time.
Yeah.
So really, per 10 yards from the scrimmage line, you're looking for 1 second of hang. So if you're hitting a 50-yard punt, you're looking for 5 seconds of hang.
Right. And did the rugby background help? I know you're very good at dropping punts inside the 20, which is a big thing in the NFL. Your field position is huge. If you can tilt the field, even if you don't score on offense, you move to midfield, you tilt the field, make them go. You were good at that. Did rugby help with that?
I think so a little bit, but it's a totally different dynamic because rugby, you kick the point of the ball to get the end over end. You kick the point of a football, you'll flip and break your foot. Yeah. So you got to like lean it back a little bit more, and it's so much more of a touch involved to it that I'm working on. And Britton Colquitt is amazing at short field punts or plus 50 punts. He kind of maneuvers it a little bit different to me, and he can hit a nice end over end punt.
Yeah.
So it was nice watching him because it was a few times in a preseason, but in the practice and stuff, and I would just give it a little tap and it would be absolutely horrible. And I'd look back at Britain, Britain's wetting himself laughing.
Thinking, so you're not there yet, kid.
Yeah, I was like, oh, here we go. And it, the thing is just being confident to commit to just going for it, not you know, giving it a little tap because you're scared of hitting it into the end zone. Like, just go for it.
So you're trying to get it to spin back, are you, when you're kicking down near the goal line?
Not necessarily. You're just trying to get it to land on a certain spot. So you're aiming for like the 8 to 10 yard line, depending
on
where you're at.
Hope for a good bounce.
Hope for a good bounce. Send up a little prayer right before it.
Get your gunners to bail you out.
Yep.
Now, Jamie completed his first season in the NFL with the Browns in 2019. It was a tumultuous one for a franchise that was tipped to bounce back after some exciting activity in draft, in free agency, in trades. But it didn't quite work out that way, did it, for the Browns? For all we saw in the media, though, how was it for someone like Jamie experiencing that in an NFL locker room for the first time?
It was just how I imagined it.
Yeah.
And I love it. I really can't say I was surprised by anything. The only thing I was surprised about, I kind of had a feeling it was going to be like this, is that how professional everybody was.
Right.
And that's amazing. I really like that part because I take my craft very seriously and winning games seriously, and so does everybody else. So it was really nice to rub shoulders with that, but that's about it.
I think when I was at training camp, I'm often surprised by training camp, and we shouldn't be because obviously you're professional athletes, you reach a high level for a reason. But what we see on the TV on a Sunday night is the game, and we know you practice, but then I think there's so much extra. So I was at Browns in the summer, and you finished practice, and then Odell Beckham Jr. came in and caught about 100 passes off the jugs machine, and there was a queue of guys behind him.
Yep.
There were about 10 guys who'd walk straight off the practice field into the gym and were doing stuff. When practice ends, it doesn't really end. I mean, the practice time that they say it ends, you can add another 20, 30 minutes in terms of how you guys work out. I think that was something that I think it's all those extra bits that I think is a professional athlete, isn't it?
Yeah, and you love the sport. That's what you do. I've even when I was growing up playing rugby, I was always early to rugby so I could do kicking practice.
Right.
And if I could stay late, I could stay late. Like when you love it so much, you just want to stay there and stay. And especially during training camp where you've got meetings and stuff anyway, you might as well make the most of your time and getting better, whether it's stretching, ice tub, cold tub, core, drops, and especially the indoor facility and stuff, because it's quite hard to work on your drops when it's super windy because it can blow your drops. But just going into the indoor, I mean, I just do countless. Drop, just trying to perfect it. And you want the ball to go straight up. Mm. Same with Odell. Catch.
The more you do it,
the better you become.
It was a stark contrast from the preseason hype to a 6-win season. Mm-hmm. As you went through that, how tough was that? And what was the mood in the locker room like? How did the guys react as that season unfolded, because there was obviously a lot of stuff around the season.
Right. I think everybody seemed to be pretty shocked after that first game, what happened. But, you know, I'm not comparing it to Merkiston at all, but I remember Merkiston, we played a preseason game against Burmuir, and we had an absolute stellar team, and we lost. And we were standing looking at each other like, what is going on? How did we just
lose? It shook
lose?
You a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, but then we pumped everybody the rest of the season because it just gave us a second gear. And but obviously that's just a little schoolboy rugby, but it's harder in the NFL because everybody is great.
Right.
You know, they're all beast athletes in every team. So every week is not just we're going to pump these guys. No, you're going against stellar athletes.
Yeah.
So I think it was a little bit annoying for some guys, but nobody stopped working. It wasn't like a give up thing. It's like, no, we're going to go and win the next one. And we fell short a couple of times, but we're a new team, you know, and we're just going to keep getting better, and that's what I believe.
I think that's the thing. You know, you either wallow in it or you learn from it. And when you look at the talent you've got on the roster, that talent's not going away, is it? So if you learn
from
it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you never know in the NFL.
You never
know. Who knows? You're right. You're quite right. But yeah, there's an incredible amount of talent there, isn't there? And do you think the guys did stay together then in the locker room?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you have nothing else. You have nothing else better to do than do that, you know. And we all care about each other and stuff. And everybody knows how cutthroat the business is, but we're family. You got to be while you're there. So you know, everybody stay together.
I think you'll see that. I'm sure you saw that in college. I'm sure you'll see it more and more in the pros. That the roster churns. The end of season roster from 1 year. It really is. You guys are together for 1 year, and then lots of things change, don't they, in the NFL? Yeah, it's a business.
Yeah, and that's I'm just going to keep working hard and being trying to be great for the Browns and great for Prefer and everybody and just try and play for as long as I can, because the NFL in my mind can stand for not for long. Mm. So I want to make I'd like to make it a long time by just my work ethic and stuff. So just got to keep my head down and keep grinding.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think you could kind of pave the way for other rugby players, other Brits? I mean, I'm just thinking back. I don't know if you won't know a guy by the name of Darren Bennett, who was a punter for the San Diego Chargers from Australia, and he was kind of the first one from Aussie rules.
Yeah.
Now look at how many Australian punters we've seen in recent years.
Absolutely heaps.
Yeah. So do you think? Would you like to think that you could do something similar?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd love in the future to start up something like that too, because it's like this. We don't. In America, they grow up throwing a ball or throwing a baseball, throwing a football, whereas we grow up kicking a football or a soccer ball. So it
should
say.
Be in our wheelhouses.
Right. I know heaps of goalkeepers with an absolute cannon of a leg. Mm. And that'd be a great kickoff specialist for college, you know. Anything because to get a free education, right?
Yeah.
And then a hopeful journey to the NFL afterwards. So, and that was my thing too, is that I wasn't never smart enough to get to a university that out here. It wasn't in my catalogue, but... I use my leg to get myself an education, so why not? And there's heaps of people with legs out here that could get an education and then hopeful for the NFL.
Okay, so let's finish this conversation where we started it, shall we? Jamie's background as a rugby player surely means he must be tempted after each punt to fly down the field and make that tackle, right?
I kind of stay out of the way a little bit because they're massive.
Yeah, right, it's different, right?
And they're fast and strong. So I'm like, oh, please for a catch this. Or a gunner, please smash him.
Yeah. So no, try not to do that then.
Yeah.
So there you are. That was my conversation with Jamie Gillen earlier in the off-season. It's been such a busy off-season. It feels absolutely ages ago that we spoke. We're looking forward to seeing what Jamie can do in year two. Time for the mailbag now. So let's bring in producer Gary Hayes. Gary, how are you doing, mate?
Hi, Neil. I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Thanks for having me back on again.
No worries. What you got for us?
Yeah, so just we've only got a couple of questions this week, but they're good questions nonetheless. So I just wanted to start with a question from Down Under, because evidently we have fans in Australia, Melbourne more specifically. This is from Greg Norman, and he asks, are Ken Anderson and Roger Craig the two most obvious Hall of Fame snubs?
Well, first of all, so somebody from Australia, and they're called Greg Norman.
Fantastic. I didn't even pick up on that myself until now.
Oh, the White Shark. This is a big listener. He's a big fan. I love it when he's not on the seniors tour or whatever. Yeah, Roger Craig and Ken Anderson. Yes, I would say. When you look at them, it's so hard for some of these older players now because they're getting bypassed in terms of numbers from the prolific offenses that we see in the NFL today. Ken Anderson played in an era when you could still beat up the quarterback, but he also played in an era when, you know, when he was coming to the end of his career, there was Dan Marino, John Elway, Joe Montana. So you can't really say Ken Anderson was one of the greats. He was the NFL passing champion for 1 year, but was he one of the greats of his era? I don't know. So I think when you can't do the numbers, because the numbers change from year to year, that you have to look, did you dominate your time, your era? And I think Roger Craig definitely did. I think Roger Craig was, you know, was an outstanding player, on a key player on a Super Bowl winning team that was multiple Super Bowls in the 49ers. He was that first 1,000 yard guy, the 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving in the same season, which, you know, we've not seen done very often at all. Christian McCaffrey most recently last season. But it's tough once those guys get lost in the mix. The NFL is more skewed towards offense now than ever before. So I think it's hard for those guys. But I think Roger Craig out of those two maybe more. But absolutely, both of those are really good cases for, to be made that potentially should be in the Hall of Fame.
Another question from Australia is from Crocodile Dundee.
Dame Edna Everidge.
but in all seriousness, this is from Nick Cummins, who I don't think is from Australia. He doesn't actually say where he's from. Yeah. But he says, I've been watching back random episodes of America's Game the past few weeks, which I'm assuming is during lockdown. Do you have a favourite? So there's so many good ones, but I especially like 86 Giants and 06 Indy.
I'm going to make a bit of an admission to you now. And this is the sort of thing, I remember saying this to my, it's sort of like when I told my best friend that I'd never watched The Godfather. And he was like, how can you never, you know, when you there's iconic films or iconic things that everyone just assumes you've watched and you haven't. So I can count on one hand the number of America's Games that I've watched, and I need to at some point. I even thought about buying the box set and just watching them. I mean, most of them are on Sky. I should really take the time to watch them. But I've only seen a handful, so I need to really, I couldn't give you a complete answer there, but I do, one of the ones I've seen is the 86 Giants, and it is actually one of my favourites that I've seen, because, and it's, I think there was the Giants one as well, where in 1990, where they go with Jeff Hostetler because Phil Simms is injured. I just think the two of them, I love the way Bill Parcells just manipulates the media. He was he was the head coach while Bill Belichick was the assistant there. So he was the original kind of Bill Belichick. He played the media. He was grumpy with the media. He wouldn't give the media too much. Then he would call out his starting quarterback, Phil Simms, and question him. And then he would question the backup. And, you know, I just thought that part of it was fascinating. But in terms of generally the whole things, I need to watch a lot more of them.
And have you watched The Godfather now?
No, I still haven't. Do you know what? I started to watch it. This is going to, I know people love it, but I started to watch it and I was like, can you take the cotton wool out of your mouth? I can't understand a word you're saying. I can't do 3 hours of this.
I think you really need to watch it. So what we're going to do is we're not going to do a podcast for the week after this, and you can watch The Godfather instead, yeah?
It's like homework.
Yeah.
Or we could do one of those watch-alongs. People could join me online, help me through
it. We should, actually. You could do the whole trilogy. but in all seriousness, talking of the next episode, who have we got up next?
We have The Godfather of Titans. No, that was a good link, wasn't it? No,
excellent.
We got my dear friend, Dallas Clark. He was a Pro Bowl tight end for the Indianapolis Colts. He was an All-Pro, which is the best of the best, a Super Bowl champion. And recently, people will know him from joining me on Sky Sports. I've become quite good friends over the last few years. So, Dallas Clark is up next on August the 27th. So, that will be actually the last one, Gary, where we're fortnightly from September the 3rd. I think we're going weekly, right?
Are we? God, I better get some sleep.
Better get some sleep, get cracking on the editing. All I have to do is sit here and talk. And thank you guys for listening. So that is this week's episode. And we'll be back on August the 27th. Until then, it's bye for now. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.